It ain't day, it's night. If you ain't sure, you might.
Thank you very much, Bob, and welcome everybody to Minds Over Matter. We hope you had a lovely weekend and can give us an hour of your time tonight, because Minds Over Matter is, was, and always will be an audience participation quiz program. So, of course, we are encouraging and welcoming your participation. It's very, very important to us. The number is area code 415-841-4134. Again, that is area code 415-841-4134. We have a lot of lines open right now. Please give us a call as soon as you can with a question or answer. Well, of course, you wouldn't have the answers yet because we haven't read the questions, but if you have a question of your own, 415-841-4134. I do want to remind you of our email address, which is mindsovermatter@yahoo.com. That's mindsovermatter, one word, at yahoo.com. If you'd like to hear our show online, you can do that anywhere in the world as we know it today, simply by going to kalw.org. That's kalw.org. If you like a podcast of the show, it should be available soon after tonight. You can get that by going to kalw.org, and it will be there along with some of our older shows. So we're going to start with a round of introductions and a round of questions. Our questions will be centered on current events, movies, history, literature, geography, television, radio, and just about everything else. So here's the first intro. On this last day of the Giants season, Jerry Nachman is a bit melancholy today, but he's trying hard to get up to speed for the playoffs, decipher the wild card schedule, and learn the names of the Oakland A's starting lineup.
It's a good goal.
Thank you, Dana. Well, Hunter Pence and Laurie Fisher are happy to announce that they both signed new contracts this weekend. The Giants and Minds Over Matter management teams figure their $9 million a year average is just about right.
It is. And our moderator, Dana Rodriguez, is looking forward to the government shutdown, as long as it can start with Ted Cruz.
So that is us. And we begin the questions with Jerry Nachman.
Okay. I'll give you two guesses each on this one.
Okay.
Where did the first Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurant open in 1952?
I'm going to guess Kentucky, but that's probably wrong.
No.
You're on a fried chicken thing. Last weekend it was all about the Korean fried chicken. All right. So obviously not Kentucky. That wasn't my real guess.
The mere fact that he asked that question means it's not Kentucky.
That's right.
Okay. So, well, the Colonel did have a...
He was a real guy.
A real guy. And he did have a couple of restaurants of his own before he sold
them. Yeah, in some place in the South. I'll say Virginia.
No.
I'll say Georgia.
No.
My second guess will be Tennessee.
No.
All right.
Southern California.
Ooh.
No.
Ooh.
All right.
That's a good one.
Okay, where was the first Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurant open? Where did it open in 1952?
Are you looking for a state or
state,
a city?
Yeah. Okay. State, yeah.
All right. And Laurie, why don't you go ahead?
All right. Well, I've been on a roll here of anniversaries. Had the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington and the 47th anniversary of the Beatles concert, last concert. Esquire magazine celebrates its 80th anniversary this month, or in October. So I have one question. The first issue in October 1933 had three stories by very famous writers. I'd want to know who those writers are. And two stories, I didn't know they did this, written by athletes, pretty famous athletes of the time. So my first question is, what famous three authors are in the first edition of Esquire? And what two athletes did they hire to write pieces about their sports? And one other question, J.D. Salinger had a story in that first, in October 1945, called This Sandwich Has No Mayonnaise. There was something very interesting and remarkable about that story.
Who read it?
J.D. Salinger.
Oh, so that's not in his collection, is it?
It is not.
No.
Is that the first story with Seymour Glass in it?
No, it's not. So October 45, the Salinger story, This Sandwich Has No Mayonnaise.
Is the famous Esme mentioned in that story?
Esme is not mentioned in that story.
Okay.
Excellent guesses.
Okay.
And then which three famous authors are in the very first edition of Esquire in October 33, and which two athletes did they hire to write pieces about their sports?
Is Hemingway one of the writers?
He is. Hemingway was in the very first
one. I was
going
to say Hemingway and Fitzgerald.
And Hemingway, Fitzgerald not sure. Fitzgerald. Hemingway wrote a piece of nonfiction, oddly enough. The other two wrote fiction and are famous for writing fiction.
Okay.
And the athletes are well-known athletes of their era.
But these are not fiction pieces that they wrote.
The other two writers did write fiction pieces for the first Esquire.
No, I mean the athletes.
Oh, right. The athletes wrote about their sports. Yeah, not fiction.
All right, 33. Is Lou Gehrig one?
No. Good guess.
33,
wouldn't be a football player. I mean, football was not.
It's not a football player.
Bill Tilden.
Great guess. A very smart guy, too, but it's not the...
I'm trying to think of the most literate athletes I could.
Tennis is possible. Oh, Gene Tunney.
Excellent.
Very good, yeah.
Because he was a writer.
He was known as, yeah.
Give yourself a bell. Yeah.
All right. Excellent.
And for those who don't know, he's a famous boxer. Yeah.
And Shakespeare expert.
He was a Shakespeare. On $64,000 question. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
No, wait, that wasn't Gene Tunney.
No, but he was a Shakespeare expert.
Yeah. He wasn't on the show.
So we're looking for two fiction writers and one other athlete, and we're looking for what was significant about J.D. Salinger's short story, The Sandwich Has No Mayonnaise, in October of 45.
So when you say something unusual about it, I mean, can you, like, is it, let's see.
What was your first guess on that one, Dana?
Seymour Glass.
Anybody in the Glass family.
Okay, with Holden Caulfield mentioned.
Yes, that was his first introduction to the American public.
Good.
Very good. All right.
Good.
So a couple more out there, but people know what they are.
And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds of a Matter.
You're in Union City.
Hello.
Yeah, you were talking about the Beatles' last concert at Chancellor Park. Somebody mentioned the Circle, but the Circle. What do both the Circle and the Beatles have in common?
What do the Circle and the Beatles have in common?
Besides playing on that show together?
Yeah, they have one thing in common.
Is it a musical thing?
Yes.
The Circle was a group?
The Circle was the group that Paul Simon wrote for and opened for the Beatles show.
Oh, wow.
Is it a song that they both sang?
No, I have something to do behind the scenes.
Oh.
Oh.
It's going to be a George Martin?
Nope.
Okay.
Behind the scenes.
But is it something like that? Like somebody produced their records or published them?
In a way, yes.
Too early.
Give us a hint.
Brian Epstein managed them both?
Yes. Give yourself a pass.
All right, Jerry. Right. Very good.
Good for you.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's my second question.
Mm-hmm.
What British actress who portrayed Elizabeth I in the public television series reprised her role in a feature film?
Glenda Jackson.
Glenda Jackson. Yeah, right.
Yeah. What was the film? Who was it?
So it was a feature film. Was it Mary Queen of Scots?
Yes. But who was the actress?
Well, Glenda Jackson, right?
Yeah. She played her in Elizabeth I, later in this, the feature film, Mary Queen of Scots.
Right, with Vanessa Redgrave playing Mary Queen of Scots.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see here. All right, what is the only song recorded by Placido Domingo, Bob Dylan, Daffy Duck, and Liberace? They record, in other words, what song do they have in common? They were all recorded.
Well, Leah Garshick would guess, Yes, We Have No Bananas.
No.
Three Little Fishies?
No.
So Dylan, Domingo, Daffy Duck.
Yes.
Not Donald Duck.
Daffy Duck.
And who is the
Liberace.
Fourth? Liberace.
God Bless America.
No, that's a decent guess, but no.
Daffy Duck.
And would this be a humorous song?
It would not be a humorous song.
It's not. It's a serious. So Daffy Duck did a
song. It is a serious song.
It's a serious rendition.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. He probably did it in a humorous way, but it is a serious song.
Is it a patriotic song?
No, it is not.
Okay.
What is the only song that has the recordings have these people in common? Placido Domingo, Bob Dylan, Daffy Duck, and Liberace. They all recorded this song.
I don't know Daffy Duck's musical work.
I never heard him sing, to be honest.
Yeah. Good question, Dan.
Yeah. Well, it's not a Dylan. Well, it could be a Dylan. Is it a Bob Dylan song?
It is not a Bob Dylan song.
Is it a traditional song or is it a recent composer?
It's a pop song.
Pop song.
Yeah. Oh, man.
All right.
And can we presume other people recorded it as well?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
You can. As if that wasn't enough for you, having Liberace and Bob Dylan both.
Well, I just want to know if they had exclusive rights to it.
Second question. Who was the last woman to win both the Pulitzer and Nobel Prizes?
Same woman.
Yes. Same woman. Kind of question would sort of lose its meaning if that were the case.
Is it Toni Morrison?
It is Toni Morrison. Yeah. Yes, very good. All right, follow up on that. Who was the first woman to win the Nobel and the Pulitzer Prize?
Edith Wharton.
No.
She was the first woman to win a Nobel, I think.
She did not win the Nobel
Prize. Is it Pearl Buck?
It is Pearl Buck. All right. Yes, very good.
Well, I've got. That's one of my questions.
You're asking a Pearl Buck question?
Yeah. What woman won the first Nobel Prize? Not Wharton.
No, it was Pearl Buck, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
No, that was not the first woman to win the Nobel. Edith Wharton was the first woman to win the Pulitzer Prize.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay.
But not the Nobel Prize.
That makes sense.
Pearl Buck was the first woman.
Okay. No, she was not the first woman to win. She was the first American woman.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Okay.
But.
All right.
Okay. All right. Maybe one more question here.
You're going on four, Dana.
No, three. I guess three. Well, you answered my other ones.
They don't count if they get answered?
How many U.S. states can you name that were named after people who were executed?
Who are what?
How many states are there that were named after people who were executed?
And they were named this before or after they were executed?
That's a good question. I have to think about that. Beside the point for the moment.
So these are United States, presumably,
yes,
right?
Yes. Okay. How many of the United States were named after people who were executed?
Well, Georgia. Is that one? That's not George III, huh?
Nope.
No, he wasn't executed either.
No.
Okay.
I think that was George
II. How many
II.
Are there?
I'm not going to say.
Wow.
Okay, well, think of...
I don't have any idea, of course.
How many U.S. states can you name that were named after people who were executed?
Well, they could be named after British people who were executed.
Yeah, I think so.
Could be Native American people, too.
Could be Native American people, too. All right. And they probably are.
You know, anyway. And Minnehaha, for Minnesota.
I don't think William Penn was executed.
No. Mm-hmm. All right, then, let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds That Matter.
Oh, hi, good evening. I have a question and possible answer. What is the tallest volcano in our solar system, and where is it?
It is on... Is it Jupiter? Oh, boy. This has come up at some point. Of course, I don't remember the... name of it anymore. Ede's probably dialing up the phone right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's got a speed dial.
Yeah. I think it is on Jupiter.
No, it's not on Jupiter.
All right. Okay.
How about Mars?
It is on Mars. And how tall is it?
Oh.
Very tall.
In what unit of measure should I give you it in?
Miles.
In miles. Okay. I'm going to go with 3.2 miles.
More.
Oh.
I'll say 6 miles.
More.
Wow.
Wow. 10.
More.
Huh. Right, better tell us.
You want to know?
Yeah, you should just tell.
It's over 15 miles high.
15?
Over 71,000 feet tall.
Wow.
My goodness gracious.
The tallest volcano.
I have to lance that.
In the solar system. Pretty amazing on a little planet like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think the... Kentucky Chicken was in South Salt Lake City.
It was Utah. Very good.
Oh, very good.
How'd you know so precisely?
I got a message beamed down to me.
from
the volcano in Mars. Huh?
From volcano in Mars. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's right.
Okay. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye.
So, is Maryland named a state named after someone executed?
No.
Okay.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Linda in El Cerrito.
Hi, Linda. I haven't heard from you in a little while.
No, that's true. I've been hiding.
Okay.
For one of the states, would Louisiana be correct?
No, it was not Louis XVI.
Okay. All right. Well, I have a question for you about culinary history. And so in 1939, a very important cookbook was published. It was entitled The Book of Healthy and Tasty Food. According to my source, there are more than 8 million in print.
Wow.
Up to this day. And it had both political and culinary implications. Can you tell me what country it was published in?
1969.
No,
1939.
39. That's Russia.
Yes. Well, yes.
Soviet Union.
Technically.
Soviet Union, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You must have read the same article.
I've been reading about that book, yeah.
Yes.
It's got a lot of reviews, yeah.
What was it? What's the name of it again?
It's The Book of Healthy and Tasty Food. And it was written after Anastas Mikoyan, who is the commissar of food in the Soviet Union, was sent by Stalin to the United States to tour it, learn all about our what we did, such as popcorn, canned food, ice cream. He met with Henry Ford and so forth. So he commissioned this cookbook, and the idea of it was, I think, to depict the Soviet Union as one big, happy, well-fed country.
I don't know. Whenever I traveled in the Soviet Union a few times, and that's... They did not take those lessons home, let me tell you.
Well, they're still trying to learn, I guess. Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Linda.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And Jerry, it's your turn.
Okay. I don't know if I asked this. Who was the only woman to lie in state in the Capitol Rotunda?
Oh, you asked this, but I...
I think I asked it once.
Oh, you might have. Well, then you should know the answer.
Yeah. I should, shouldn't I? It was Rosa Parks?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I did ask.
Okay, okay. According to Bloomberg News, what percentage, within 10%, of American men have extramarital affairs, and what percentage of American women?
According to Bloomberg.
Mm-hmm.
And Bloomberg's the expert on extramarital affairs.
Yeah, right.
Divorced.
Wow, yeah. oh, man.
Okay, once more, Jerry.
According to Bloomberg News, what percentage of American men have extramarital affairs within 10%? And what percentage of American women?
I'll say 30% men.
No.
Too high or too low?
I can't tell you.
Okay. And I'll say 15% women.
Very good, 14.7. Excellent.
Was this a blind study where people, you know...
I have no idea.
Self-reporting. Yeah, yeah. It's hard to know for sure.
It's hard to, yeah. We're still looking for the men?
The men, yeah. Men.
The women were just under 15%.
Yeah.
Well, if the women are just under 15%, unless, who are the men having the affairs with?
Other men.
Complicated question.
Other men or single women, apparently.
Or the same woman over and over.
Yeah. And, well, some of those women are very busy, I suppose. How about 45% for the men?
No.
All right.
Okay, that's, you're
that
out.
That seems too high.
Really?
I hope. I don't know.
I don't know.
No hints on that one, huh?
No.
Okay.
All right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is David Price Weldy in San Francisco.
Hi, David.
Hi. For Lori's question about the writers for Esquire, my guesses would be William Faulkner or Gertrude Stein.
Boy, those are good guesses.
Faulkner's a good guess.
Neither one was in that first edition.
Okay, and then would Althea Gibson be an athlete that would have written?
You know, she isn't. That's such a good guess. I don't know that she
wrote. She's after that, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, good guess.
She's in the 50s, 60s.
Question about the multi people singing the same song. Would that be Fly Me to the Moon?
That's a pretty good guess, too, but no.
I'd love that to be the answer.
Thank you.
Laurie, would one of the writers be Sinclair Lewis?
No, okay. Not. But we're talking, everybody's in the right kind of area. Yeah. They're that well known.
Thomas Wolfe?
No.
Okay.
Theodore Dreiser?
Nope.
Okay. And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We are here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Hope you're enjoying the show. We certainly do enjoy bringing it to you. Our panel tonight is a well-known Bay Area author, Jerry Nachman, from Diablo Valley College, teacher Lori Fisher. I'm your moderator, Dana Rodriguez. And you're listening to us on 91.7 FM. That's KALW, your local public radio station. And if you'd like to join us here with a question or answer, the number is area code 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, Steve. How are you? Well, I'm really glad somebody else asked you an astronomy question.
First time.
By the way, I had to answer for a question about the chicken. It is in Utah. So I have, you know, whenever we deal with ancient time or Middle Ages, we always say like 1200 B.C. or 1200 A.D., what is the difference between 1 B.C. and 1 A.D. in years? How many years between 1 B.C. and 1 A.D.?
Yeah, it's a trick. Is there a trick in here?
Well,
should there be
three?
There's more than 1 year.
Yeah. Is it three?
Take another guess.
Three.
Wrong.
Okay.
I think it's up.
Give me the answer.
I'll say six years.
No, take another guess.
Two.
Another guess.
All right.
Jerry, get in there.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I don't pretend to know.
One year. That's it.
All right.
There was no zero AD or no zero BC.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
yeah,
of course. Question.
Yeah.
Yes. There were no zero. So
it is zero.
Okay, what is... Well, it can say you could see BC means before Christ. What about AD? What does it mean?
Anno Domini? In the
That's
year of
right, but also it also have similar meaning.
A different meaning besides that?
No, the same meaning, but more English-like meaning.
In the year of our Lord, is that what you mean?
Well, you have D to worry about when you have A.
AD.
What happened to Christ at the point of crucifixion?
Death after death. After
he died,
death.
Right?
Yeah.
So after death. It means
okay.
After death.
Right.
It's similar way. Okay. The other question I have is, the largest collection of Egyptian papyri is in at the Great University of California, Berkeley, where I graduated from.
Egyptian what?
Papyri, you know, plural papyrus.
Oh.
Yeah, you can see there are very good collection of Egyptian poems, really beautiful. You should go and read it. I mean, it shows these people no different than us today, you know, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years later.
Mm-hmm.
But where Egypt had great movies from 1900 on, it competed with Hollywood. What is the largest Egyptian movie collection? What university has the largest movie collection outside Egypt?
You mean of Egyptian films?
Of Egyptian films, right.
Okay.
Of Egyptian films that were made in the 1920s and 30s and 40s. And
UCLA?
Five more.
UCLA?
No.
Is it in the United
States? I'll give you a hint. It's not in the United States.
No, it's not in the United States.
No.
London.
No.
Or England,
actually. You know, now, when you talk about cousins, what are you talking about?
Cousins?
Syria? No.
Is this a thematic different question?
Cousins. Thematic cousins. Thematic cousins.
Thematic cousins.
Thematic cousins.
Yes. Thematic cousins.
No, we don't know.
Know.
Well, you know, very big percentage of Jewish people in Israel are Egyptian heritage. So it's the Hebrew University in Israel.
Oh.
By far. Great show. I always love to listen to you and other people. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, E. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Laurie, it's your turn.
All right. So last week, we were on the air during the Emmy, so I have an Emmy question focusing on the lead actor in a dramatic series. So I'm looking for... There was an 18-year gap between someone winning the lead actor Emmy 1 year, and then he won it for the first time, and then won it 18 years later for playing the same role. I'm wondering who that is. I also want to know, I think, if I read this right, there's only one lead actor who won the Emmy for playing two different roles, two different, completely different series. And then two different people won it three times in a row. So I want to know the biggest gap between first winning it and last winning it. I want to know who won it for two different roles and then who won it three times in a row. And they're all different people, obviously.
And this is the lead Emmy...
Dramatic series.
For a dramatic series.
Yeah.
Didn't Loretta Young win?
I'm only looking for lead actor.
Oh, actor. Yeah. Okay.
She might have.
Who won it 3 years in a row? 3 years in a row. What? How long ago was that?
One was really recent, like within the last 10 years, and the other one is back in the 60s for the three in a row.
So it's not...
One is still on the air.
It's not Breaking Bad.
It is.
Yeah,
yeah.
Bryan Cranston.
Bryan Cranston won 3 years in a row from 2008 to 2010.
Okay.
So that's one of them. Okay.
All right, what were the other ones you wanted
to do? The
other
one was the biggest gap was 18 years between winning it for the first time and the last time.
But not for the same role.
Yeah, it was the same role.
I believe I'm the only one in America who's never seen Breaking Bad.
You might be. Some people are probably watching it now.
18 years.
It was a show that came and went. It came on the air, then it would go off, and then it would come back and come off.
What does that mean, anyway, Breaking Bad?
I think it means turning to drugs. You break and become. I think so. I think you break bad when you go from a good life to a bad life.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Anyway, so we'll leave them out there for that.
And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello.
Hi, you're on.
Yeah, I was wondering, is the song that you're looking for Blue Moon?
It is not Blue Moon.
All right.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
But is it that kind of American classic song?
It is a classic song.
Okay.
Yes, it's definitely a classic song. And
you didn't say whether it's a comedy song or a ballad.
It is not a comedy song. It is a ballad.
Yeah. It is a ballad.
And
yes.
Daffy Duck sings it.
Yeah. And Bob Dylan.
Yeah, and Dylan.
A little tenderness.
No.
It's not a terrible guess. It's probably going to be no sillier than that.
Something like
the
that.
Answer.
Yeah, that's not silly.
Liberace and Daffy Duck.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hey guys, this is Hayes from San Francisco.
Hello.
Nice to talk to you guys again. Listen, the song has got to be a Beatles song. Am I right?
It's got to be what?
I am not going to say.
It's got to be a Beatles song. It's either Hey Jude or the other one I think it might be would be Yesterday.
It is Yesterday.
Ah!
Very good.
Well, that's the song.
Daffy Duck sang that?
Well,
That's
the most covered song in the history of popular music.
I think I knew that.
Yeah. I was thinking it might be Hey Jude rather than Yesterday.
No, it's Yesterday.
A couple of other things. The fellow that called before about the difference between B.C. and A.D., shouldn't that be 33 years?
Because that's the age of Christ. That was it. Yeah, right. That's a good point.
Wouldn't that be the one?
Age of Christ at the crucifixion?
Yes.
Is that when they measure it?
So they say.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, so they say.
I wasn't there.
Yeah,
John Wayne was though.
And then the other thing about the married couples admitting to getting up to naughties. I mean, are you going to believe them?
Yeah,
on the infidelity.
On the infidelity.
Yeah.
Right. Unless it's a totally blind sort of study.
Well, yeah, but it kind of...
And it may have been. I don't know.
Lying, then it's sort of...
It's a wash.
It's a wash,
so
yeah.
Either they're secretive or they're bragging. I know, it's one of the other.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Okay, so the BBC and the Daily Telegraph combined, and they did a survey a couple of years ago on the... 50 greatest literary villains of all time.
So 50 greatest villains?
Literary villains.
Literary villains.
Literary villains. The 50 greatest literary villains. So this is, it's not, by no means is this English-centric. So in other words, there
are
Americans
on this.
How many
are we supposed to get? 50?
No, let me explain the question. So what I'm going to do is give you six actors who played these villains.
Oh.
And I want you to tell me who the villains were. All right. So again, this is a list taken from the Daily Telegraph and the BBC. They did a survey on the 50 greatest literary villains of all time. So I'm going to give you six actors who played these villains, six different villains, and I want you to tell me who the villains are. Number one.
Just to be clear, they were created for plays and short stories and novels, not for the movies.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Literary. So number one, Richard Burton. Number two, Peter Sellers. Number three, John Voight. Number four, Robert Newton. Number five, Sidney Greenstreet. and number 6, Angelina Jolie. Once more, I'll explain the question. The Daily Telegraph and the BBC did a survey a couple of years ago on the 50 greatest literary villains of all time. So I give you 6 actors who played these different villains in films, in film adaptions of these works. Number 1, Richard Burton. Number 2, Peter Sellers. Number 3, John Voight. Number 4, Robert Newton. Number 5, Sidney Greenstreet. Number 6, Angelina Jolie. They're all written in English, I'll say that. Okay. And taken from very well-known novels, of course, or stories.
I don't remember Burton ever playing a villain.
Did Richard Burton, is it 1984?
It is 1984.
Okay. He's not
remember the name of the character?
Oh, it's the guy who's the inquisitor of Winston Smith. Oh, I will at 802, so you might as well tell us.
His name is O'Brien.
Oh, that's right. Okay. And is...
Yes, 1984. That's yours. So you got yours.
That's it. Okay.
For now.
Peter Sellers. God.
Angelina Jolie.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting villain.
And the number to join us is area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's area code 415-841-4134. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
This is Michael from El Cerrito.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
For the states named after executed people, aren't the Carolinas named after Charles?
And they are. Yes. I'm glad you figured that out. North and South Carolina are actually named for the Latin. The Latin is, I'm going to get this right, it is Carolinas. Which is the origin of the name Charles, and they are named after Charles the First.
Oh,
very good. North and South Carolina.
And Maryland?
No, not Maryland.
Okay. Well, how about the writers in Esquire? Was Fitzgerald one of them?
No, he was not. Not in that one.
No. How about Roebuck?
No. She wasn't in that one either, as far as I know. When I saw the list, she wasn't there. Good guesses.
Was the athlete Babe Ruth?
No. I don't know that the Babe ever wrote any any pieces for anything, but he's not the one. It was not a baseball player. That's a clue.
I had my doubts. Okay, well, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the Third Amendment in the Bill of Rights. First of all, do you know what that amendment's about?
No.
It's about three and after one and
two. It's the one between two
and four. Let's see. All right, let me think for a minute.
You can tell us.
Freedom of worship. Go ahead.
It guards people against being forced to put up soldiers.
All right.
Okay.
In their houses.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the distinction of that amendment?
What's the distinction
of it?
You mean it is compared to the other amendments?
Yeah, there's something about it compared to the other 10. Compared to the other 9 in the Bill of Rights that makes it unique.
Was it telling Britain that it could not do something?
No.
Okay.
I think that a couple of the amendments were kind of telling.
Okay.
Telling Britain that.
Distinction. I'm sorry, we don't know.
It's the only one on which a Supreme Court decision has never been written.
Oh,
that's very interesting.
Very interesting question.
Yeah.
What is it about?
About being forced to house soldiers.
Oh.
Interesting.
That's great.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Is the Esquire athlete Bobby Jones?
Yes. The great golfer, very good. Yeah. So Gene Tunney and Bobby Jones were the two athletes, boxing and golf.
Yeah.
Hemingway wrote a work of nonfiction. I'm looking for the two people who wrote fiction. Pretty well known.
All right. Let's repeat any questions that haven't been answered yet. Jerry?
Oh, I'm looking for the percentage of men who admit to having extramarital affairs.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
I'm looking for the lead actor for Who Won an Emmy. there was an 18-year gap between the time he first won and the time he last won. He won one more time in the middle. I'm looking for someone besides Bryan Cranston who won three times in a row. And there's one person who won the lead actor for playing two different roles. Who's that?
But the one that won 18 years apart, it was for the same role, you said?
Yes. Same role. Well known.
Is this a real person he was playing?
No. Fictional. And well-known, kind of iconic TV character, made this actor's reputation in some ways. He's known for this, even though he made lots of movies, too. I think he would take off from the show and make movies for years and then come back and do four of them or six of them.
Robert Young?
Oh, Robert Young is the one who won for two different series. He won for Marcus Welby and Father Knows Best.
That's what I was answering.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's very good.
That's what I was answering, yeah.
Of course it was.
Yes. Jim Anderson and Marcus Welby. So Robert Young won for two different roles. Very good.
I'm sorry.
Interesting.
All right, so we're looking for three in a row, and we're looking for the biggest gap between first time winning.
Did Robert Newton play Javert in Les Miserables?
He did play Javert, but that is not on the list.
Really?
No.
He's one of the great villains of old. Not in 100 great villains?
These are all in English for the most part.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So,
okay. Well, he did play Javert.
He did play Javert, yeah. Okay. In the 50s version of Les Miserables.
I thought I'd nail one guess each?
For now.
Okay.
For now. Excuse me, I have to repeat this. So, just once more, the Daily Telegraph and the BBC a couple of years ago did a survey on the 50 greatest literary villains of all time. Now, this is mostly an English-centric, you know, or at least written in English from a novel or a story or whatever. So what I gave you the actors who played these villains in film adaptions of this work. So Richard Burton was answered. He played O'Brien in 1984. We're still looking for Peter Sellers, John Voight, Robert Newton, Sidney Greenstreet, and Angelina Jolie.
Did Newton play Professor Moriarty?
He did not.
Okay.
So that's what I thought, too.
And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, yeah, is that me?
It is you.
Hey, yeah, this is David in Oakland.
Hi, David.
Yeah, well, my thunder was stolen on Bobby Jones, but Lori, I'm guessing the Emmy's the farthest apart. Is that Peter Falk as Columbo?
It is.
Oh, that makes sense.
Very good.
It's very good.
I like that.
Right. Okay, and then I have a question for you as well.
Mm-hmm.
The lyrics to what famous TV sitcom were written by one of the stars of Citizen Kane?
Oh, that's interesting.
Okay.
Wait a minute. One of the stars.
So the lyrics to the theme.
One of the main performers. I'll say not by Orson Welles or Joseph Cotton.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it written by Everett Sloan?
Yes.
Okay.
Really?
Because I know he dabbled.
For a sitcom?
Well, he wrote, I'm trying to think. Did he?
What decade was the sitcom on?
In the 60s.
60s, okay. He didn't do the Beverly. No, he didn't do the Beverly Hillbillies song.
Was it Rocky and Bullwinkle?
No.
Okay, that's too much.
So was the opening theme song, like that they played over the credits? Or the opening?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a trick question. Because they ended up not, even though they recorded it, they didn't end up using the version with lyrics.
Oh, well, then we wouldn't know.
Oh, otherwise, we'd know it for sure.
Actually, it's a well-known TV sort of...
In other words, when we saw the show, it didn't have any lyrics to it.
Correct. Even though it was recorded. In fact, it was recorded by the star of the show with the lyrics.
How about one of the Andy Griffith shows, like Andy and Mayberry?
It's actually the Andy Griffith show.
Oh, there
very
you go.
Good.
Oh.
Very good.
Yeah, you can listen to it online. It's actually a pretty good version.
And Everett Sloan guested on the Andy Griffith show, too.
No kidding. Exactly.
He was a guest. Yes, he did. No. I remember him being on.
Really? Right.
Thank you. That's a good
I've
question.
I've never seen him in anything except severe roles.
Was he related to Edward Everett Sloan?
Edward Everett Horton.
Oh. I take back all my correct answers. That's what I thought it was.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Yes, hello. I'd like to try to answer the question about the Liberace and Daffy Duck song.
Okay, go ahead.
Is it That's Amore?
No, it's not. Actually, somebody answered it a couple minutes before you. It was Yesterday by the Beatles.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, well, I guess fitting for me getting to the question late. So, anyways, well, I've I try. So.
Thank you very much, though.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. And Lori, I think it's your turn.
Okay. All right. In June of 1917, the four following famous people had something happen to them all at the same time. What was it? Mark Twain, Auguste Rodin, Camille Saint-Saëns, the composer, and Rudyard Kipling.
Well, Mark Twain was dead in June of 1917.
Then maybe it was 1907.
Maybe that's better.
Okay. Yeah. So they weren't all dead. He was definitely alive, or at least according to
Kipling,
the note.
Kipling, Rodin, Twain, and who was the fourth?
It was Rodin, Twain, Saint-Saëns, and Rudyard Kipling.
When you say they all had something happen to them, is this all the same thing?
Yes.
But not in the same place.
It was all in the same place. I don't know that they all were there at the same place, but they all, the same thing happened to them.
Did they get an honorary degree from Oxford?
They did. They all got an honorary degree.
I know Twain
on the same
did.
Day. Yeah, very
yes.
good.
All right.
Yeah, pretty august crew.
Yes.
Very good.
Give us something else.
Okay. Here's one. What? This is a little bit off center. What do these names have in common? These are all the names of something. Iron pigs, lug nuts, sand gnats, isotopes, and flying squirrels. Those are all the names of something.
Is this a food?
No.
Okay.
So iron pigs, lug nuts, sand gnats, isotopes, and flying squirrels. They're not food. As far as I know, they're not foods.
Mm-hmm. It's all variations on the same thing. Or it is all exactly the same thing.
I can't say. They're all the names of the same thing. But they're all not like the names of, you know, kinds of bread all over the world. They're not like that.
Okay. All right. And
they're all regional, by the way. They all are true in a certain place.
In the United States?
Yes.
All right. And it's not food.
Iron pigs, lug nuts, sand gnats, isotopes, and flying squirrels.
All right. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Peter Ingman Park.
Hey, Peter.
I'm thinking that one of the villains has to be Fagin.
No, not Fagin.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Who were you thinking of for Fagin?
Certainly not Angelina Jolie.
No.
Sydney Greenstreet, but possibly Peter Sellers.
No.
No? Okay. And was your question answered about how many states were named after executed people? Were there just two?
It was just two.
Okay, I wasn't sure whether.
Did you have another idea?
Well, I'm pretty sure Lord Delaware died in his bed, but.
Yes. Well, he might have been murdered in his bed, I don't know, but
well,
no.
He wasn't executed, probably.
No.
And I have a question.
Yes.
Can you tell me, please, what is a mondegreen?
Oh, that's a misheard song lyric.
Yes.
Very good.
Very good. Can you give me an example?
Oh, everybody's got them from their past.
Gladly the Cross-Eyed Bear.
Yes.
That's a standard one, yeah.
Do you know where the name derives from?
No. John Carroll's written about this in the past.
Is it something to do with green sleeves?
Something on the green. Yeah,
What? Tell us.
The Scottish ballad... they have killed the Earl of Moray and laid him on the green.
Laid him on the green, yeah, right, uh-huh.
Yeah. Earl of Moray and laid him on the green. All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you, appreciate it.
There's a famous one with Lucy in Disguise with Diamonds.
Oh,
that's one of the ones that people hear. I think there's many, and people are shocked, including me, when you find out the real lyrics. It's very embarrassing.
Who asked the Iron Pigs question?
I did.
Are they candies?
No.
Okay.
Not food.
Oh,
so
not food.
Not food.
Okay.
Yeah. It'd be a terrible name for a candy, wouldn't it? Iron pigs.
I don't know.
Maybe not. All right. But lug nuts. Well, maybe not. Okay. But they aren't edible, any of them.
And the number to join us is area code 415-841-4134. Again, this is Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7 p.m. here on KALW. And you can join us at 415-841-4134 with a question or answer. All right. Let me see.
Well, I was going to guess Peter Sellers in Dr. Strangelove, but that was never a book.
No.
I don't think.
It had to be, no. It had to come from
okay.
A book or a story. All right. Let's see. The subtitle to this well-known work is A Trivial Comedy for Serious People. What is the work? What is the well-known literary work?
English language?
It is in English, yes.
Is it a novel?
It is not a novel.
Is it a play?
It is a play. The subtitle to this very famous play is A Trivial Comedy for Serious People.
Contemporary?
It's over 30 years old, so it's not that contemporary.
Okay. American?
You're chipping away at it.
I'm trying.
It is not American.
Not American, okay.
A Trivial Comedy.
I've heard it, yeah.
You probably have.
Have we all seen it?
I wouldn't be surprised on some version of it. A Trivial Comedy for Serious People is the subtitle to what very famous play?
Is it turned into a movie?
It has been, several times.
Okay.
Yeah. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Thomas in Berkeley.
Hi, Thomas.
With a dinner guest.
Yeah.
For the Esquire thing, we're thinking either O. Henry or O'Hara.
Boy, O'Hara is such a good guess. I don't know if O. Henry is.
O'Hara is a great guess.
Yeah, but neither one's right. O'Hara wrote a lot for Esquire, but not for the first one.
Okay, then what's that there?
Oh, it's 35%
for cheating males.
35%? No.
And then all that's left is the Dylan.
Yes.
Robert Newton for Long John Silver?
No, not Long John Silver, though he did play Long John Silver.
And what about Sidney Greenstreet for Mr. Gutman?
And no, not Mr. Gutman.
Those are
good guests. No bells.
No bells. What's
I'm just going my way.
What's for dinner, Thomas?
Well, we just had a chicken loaf.
Chicken loaf.
I've never
chicken
heard
loaf.
Of that.
Oh. Wow. Yeah.
You mean ground up chicken that formed into the shape of a loaf.
Just like a meatloaf.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Fabulous salad. And we'll do dessert after you guys are through.
All right.
I'll be by.
Okay.
So Long John Silver is not one of the top 50 villains.
Long John Silver is one of the top 50 villains, but that is not the one that I picked for Robert Newton. Let's put it that way. This is a different. This is an even better known,
even a
literary
villain.
A villain.
Yes. Better known than Long John Silver.
I would say so. Probably. Oh, slightly, yeah.
How about Sellers as Claire Quilty?
That is correct.
In Lolita.
That's really
very good.
Good.
Yes.
That's really good.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
In Lolita.
Okay.
So we still have four of those out, right?
Yes. John Voight, Robert Newton, Sidney Greenstreet, and Angelina Jolie.
And Angelina Jolie is the daughter of John Voight, but there's no...
Yeah, there is no relation, although I hadn't even thought of that, but you're right, of course.
Angelina Jolie, what did she do that's literary?
I've never seen her in anything.
And...
you're missing something.
Well...
I've never seen Jerry do that.
She's no Adrienne Barbeau, but...
Well, I think she is.
Yeah, that's true. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello, it's Hayes again.
Hi.
The thing about the iron pig,
would
that be to do with steel construction?
It's nothing to do with steel construction, but a great guess, because we lose out on the isotopes and flying squirrels. They don't quite fit that.
But I know guys have put that together, and they have little vernaculars for different
things. They do, but that's not it.
The other thing I wanted to say, though, is that Sellers was in a really great film from, I don't know what it was, 62 or something. I think it was called Never Let Me Go or something like that.
Oh, he did play the villain in that, didn't he?
Who did?
He played a...
Peter Sellers.
I don't remember the exact name of it, but...
He played a gangster. He played a pathological gangster.
Yeah. He owned a garage or something.
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess that wasn't the answer to it.
No, that wasn't it.
All right, mate. Well, have fun.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
We should be able to get Sidney Greenstreet.
I would think.
Yeah.
It's a very famous English novel of the 19th century. And in the movie adaptation, he played the bad guy.
Yeah. I'm thinking John Voight.
All right. And Jerry Turner.
Good question.
Okay. In 1789, George Washington borrowed two books. to the New York Society Library.
Refused to return them.
And never returned them.
Never returned them.
Boy,
according
the fine.
According to Society librarians in 2010, how much were his overtime fines estimated to be?
You mean if he returned them in his lifetime or in our
time? In our lifetime.
Oh, jeez.
Well, I don't know what within 10%. Now. Used to be 10 cents a day when I was growing up.
Well, what was it when Washington
probably
was
a penny,
was
a penny, or penny,
yeah,
oh, it had
probably
to be a penny. But yeah, that compound interest will kill you.
But there were two books. Remember,
there were two.
So.
We have,
well, I don't know if they do that. Maybe they don't compound the interest.
Well, that's true. Maybe they just add it up.
Yeah, I have
all
no
right.
idea.
All right.
Library's not that mercenary.
No.
And did they ever get the money from his estate?
No, but this library gave a copy of the book, one of the books, to Mount Vernon.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. So they recovered the books, huh?
All right. I don't know if they ever did.
How to Be Your Own Best Friend. And
yeah, I guess they originally, yeah.
So it's over 200 years worth of fines. This is a lot. All right, I'll just start out with $500,000 each, so $1 million.
No.
Okay, way too much. Give
it was too much. I'll say, gosh, let's see. I'll say 27,000.
No, too little.
Too little.
I believe at a real library, you can't exceed the cost of the book. If you exceed,
well,
that,
yeah, this is just
this
for
is,
fun.
Okay.
Yeah,
oh.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So
okay.
27,000 was too
were,
little,
yeah.
And $1 million was too much.
Yeah.
All right.
So.
All right. I'll go with $85,000.
No.
All right. All right. Still too little?
Okay. Yeah.
And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
I see. Just correction. I'm sorry. I made a mistake. AD does not mean after death. So it means anno domini, as he said before, which means the Latin word, which means in the year of our Lord.
Right.
Sorry. That's what Laurie said. Yeah,
yeah, he did say
that. Yes, you were right. I'm wrong.
Okay, well, you're a good dude.
Thank you for
calling.
He was
right. Yes.
You're a big man to admit it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Robert and Karen in Berlin.
Hi.
And we're wondering if the Trivial Play is Importance of Being Earnest.
That is correct.
Oh, yes.
Very good.
I should have got that.
That was familiar.
I should have got
work.
That.
Good work.
Excellent.
And then I have a question for you all.
Yes.
So Ted Cruz's grandstanding, whatever the heck it was, was not the longest, was not apparently a filibuster. Right. If it had really been a filibuster.
We were talking about that, actually, just before the show.
It wouldn't have been the longest filibuster. History.
Mm.
So, do you know what the longest filibuster was?
The one I always hear about is Strom Thurmond.
That's right.
How long?
24 hours.
Okay.
24 hours, 18 minutes. And do you remember what he was filibustering?
Yeah.
Civil Rights Act, was that it?
Yes. 1957 Civil Rights Act.
Right.
Which, thank God, got passed him. Like, I hope that the Bible got passed.
Yeah, really. Let's hope so.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We have a few minutes left. You'd like to give us a call, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hey, is it me?
It is you.
Hi, it's Alec in San Francisco.
Hi, Alec.
So I have some guesses, I have a question, and I know what Breaking Bad means because people were still saying that.
Okay, go ahead. Tell us.
So if you're breaking bad, that means you're getting really aggressive and pushy, and you're pushing for a fight.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Was the literary author in the magazine, was one of them Steinbeck?
No. Not Steinbeck.
Yeah.
Another good guess.
Yes.
Gosh.
Was one of the athletes Jim Thorpe?
No. We got the two athletes. They were Gene Tunney and Bobby Jones.
Oh, I missed Bobby Jones. Sorry. My girlfriend supplies the interesting information that Angelina Jolie is soon to play the witch in Sleeping Beauty.
That is
one of the greatest literary villains.
That is not it, because this actually was the source of this question was about 2 or 3 years old.
Oh, okay.
So that wouldn't have entered into it.
So it's right, another three
revised.
Yes.
No, I'm just kidding. okay, my question for you is three advertising mascots, all of which were cartoons or cartoon characters.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to give you the mascot. Tell me what the product or business was.
Okay.
Okay.
Jeffrey the Giraffe.
Ooh, that sounds familiar.
That's at Toys R Us.
It's Toys R Us.
Very good.
The Cavity Creeps.
The Cavity Creep?
The Cavity Creeps. They're an army of creeps who want to cause cavities.
This is a toothpaste.
Yeah.
Colgate.
Nope.
Going for alliteration there. Crest.
It's Crest.
All right.
Cavity creep Crest.
We make holes in teeth, which is why.
That's right.
Okay, last one is named Dig'em.
Oh, that's from that cereal, Honey Smacks or Sugar Smacks.
Yep, it's Kellogg's.
I used to eat that when I was a kid, so I remember.
Man, my mom would never let me eat that. All right, thank you guys.
Thank you.
I used to get cavities as a kid, so it all.
That's why I needed the Crest. And let's see, next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, did anyone answer the question about the song that Daffy Duck, Bob Dylan, and Liberace had in common?
They did, but go ahead. What was your guess?
My guess would have been King for a Day.
That's an interesting guess. But no, it was a Beatles song, Yesterday.
Oh, darn it. Okay, thank you so much.
No, you're welcome. I'm trying to imagine Daffy Duck singing that. Can you do a little of that for me? I cannot. Sorry.
I could do Donald.
That's Donald Duck.
I can do Donald. I don't think I can do Daffy.
Did you have another guess on the literary? I think you said you had a couple. Is that what you didn't? Okay.
Well, I had them.
You were waiting. I thought you were waiting with one.
I thought it was Moriarty for Robert Newton.
Oh,
and I thought
right.
It was something else. But Green Street, John Voy, and Angelina Jolie. Okay. I'm pulling a blank.
And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello.
Hi, you're on.
Hey, this is Andy in Oakland.
Hi, Andy.
The famous play, God Answered It, was Importance of Being Earnest.
Correct.
Okay, the isotopes. Could you repeat the question involving isotopes?
The question is, what do these things have in common? They are names of the same thing. Iron pigs, lug nuts, sand gnats, isotopes, and flying squirrels.
Are they sports teams?
They are. What kind?
Oh.
Fictional ones?
Nope. They're all very real.
Oh, okay. I don't know what sport, but I think they're teams. Yeah.
They're all minor league baseball teams.
I've heard of the Flying Squirrels, and I didn't know why.
They're the Richmond Flying Squirrels, the Albuquerque Isotopes, Savannah Sand Gnats, Lansing Lugnuts, and Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs.
Oh,
very good.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very fun. Interesting.
Get your hats now. Good work.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter. Are you there? All right, next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hello?
Hi, you're on.
Hey, I think I just missed it. I had the minor league baseball team.
Oh, give them a bell.
Here's your bell anyway.
Thanks.
All right, you bet.
That's good. They're fun.
Okay, time to clean up here. What do we got? Well, in 1789, George Washington borrowed two books. According to society librarians, the name of the library society, in 2010, how much were his overtime fines estimated to be? $300,000.
Oh, yeah.
And the other one was, that according to Bloomberg News, what percentage of American men have extramarital affairs? 21%.
Okay.
Not so much.
And I have the Emmy actor who won three times in a row was Bill Cosby back in the 60s for I Spy. And the authors in Esquire, we got Hemingway and Gene Tunney and Bobby Jones. We didn't get Dashiell Hammett writing a detective piece and John Dospassos, who's pretty well known.
That makes sense.
Many people should read him.
Dospassos, yeah. Okay, the literary villains we have here. John Voight played Milo Minderbinder from Catch-22.
He did.
Robert Newton played Bill Sykes from Oliver Twist. Sidney Greenstreet played Count Fosco. Count Fosco from The Woman in White.
Oh,
I don't know that. And Angelina Jolie, my favorite one, she played Grendel's mother in Beowulf a couple of years ago. Remember?
I actually
2007.
I remember
the movie
Grendel. I didn't know that Angelina Jolie. Grendel's
mom.
Come up on my villain list. Yeah. That's a great one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we do not get your call, we do apologize. Please remember the Minds Over Matter is here every Sunday at 7 p.m. So we hope you enjoyed the show and will join us that next Sunday. Our panel tonight was author Jerry Nachman from Diablo Valley College, Lori Fisher. Thank you very much, Lori.
Thanks.
I've been your moderator, Dana Rodriguez. Our thanks to Bob Summer and Steve Wilcott for handling the board and phones. And above all, our thanks to you for taking the time to tune in and call in. Have a great week, everybody. Please join us next Sunday at 7 o'clock. Bye-bye.
If you ain't wrong, you're right. If it ain't day, it's night. If you ain't sure, you might. It's gotta be this or that.